Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18th floor, 303 East Wacker, overlooking beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here until 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And, yeah, we got a bunch of other fun stuff that we're going to be talking about. The weirdest American Guinness World Records. We have the greatest inventions of the past 50 years that we're going to talk about. Some of the summer obsessions that everybody is going crazy over. And the most iconic food dishes in each state. We're going to try and get to all of that stuff and have some fun this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. There you go. So it is Monday. That means the Monday morning movie reviews will commence. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to talk movies and review them. And then Eric sticks around and we talk about the box office. So got some new films to talk about this week, so let's bring the guys in, and here is Colin. Hey, Colin, welcome back.
Hello there.
And Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. We got some movies we got to talk about here, so why don't we start? Actually, you know, Colin, you're the only one who saw Uncle Drew.
All right.
And so why don't you try to explain Uncle Drew to us all?
Yeah, well, this is a movie based on an episodic series, a web series, I guess, created by Pepsi, but I have zero familiarity with it, so this review is just about the movie as a standalone product. And it stars Lil Rel Howery from Get Out as a basketball coach named Dax, who in the first 10 minutes or so loses his team, his wife, his job, everything, and he goes looking for a place to live, and he stops by a basketball court where an elderly gentleman starts bad-mouthing all the young players, and they challenge him, and he accepts and eventually kicks their butts. And this elderly gentleman is Uncle Drew, played by Kyrie Irving. And he agrees to be Dax's player for a team that Dax wants to put back together to get back at an old rival of his who took away his team. But Uncle Drew says he wants to put together the team himself, you know, his terms and everything. So they embark on a road trip and find all the old players and basically put the band back together. So you got more actors and athletes in old age prosthetics like Shaquille O'Neal and Chris Webber, Reggie Miller and Nate Robinson, and they all have physical ailments, but because these characters are played by athletes, they can still play basketball better than anyone. So, you know, this is what appears to be, you know, kind of a standard broad comedy sports movie. At least that's how it seems to be advertised. But the movie plays it straight so much that you almost forget that you're watching a comedy. And it's hard to, it's one of these movies that's just trying to do too much. And it ends up just not really working as anything. As a comedy, it has, you know, a few little, you know, improv moments and little jokes thrown into the dialogue. It has one very funny moment involving a baptism that eventually, as the scene wears on, it actually starts to lose the focus of what's really funny in that scene and just kind of becomes unfunny. But you're watching these actors and non-actors, but athletes in this very obviously phony, you know, old age prosthetic makeup, trying to create these genuine characters and these genuine emotions. But it's so, you know, the makeup is so obvious that it's just, it doesn't work. It's like trying to make a heartfelt movie about the characters that Arsenio Hall and Eddie Murphy played in Coming to America. You know, those bit parts at the
barbershop,
the sexual chocolate characters and the barbershop characters. Yeah. And it just doesn't work. And, you know, the movie is directed by Charles Stone III, who you know, not exactly, not exactly a director with great comedic, abilities, but that's the problem here. So the sports movie is very predictable, standard stuff. You know exactly where it's going. It follows the rules and follows, the general, guidelines or, how to put together a sports movie. But as a comedy, it just doesn't work because it forgets it's a comedy, and as a heartfelt character movie, it fails at that too because it's just very phony. So I do give him credit for, trying to create a genuine, something genuine out of what is essentially a very crass product placement film, because the Pepsi logo is everywhere in this movie. But it just didn't work. It had the wrong script and just the wrong idea on how to try to make this thing into a feature length thing. But I do like the lead. I do like, Lil Rel Howery in the lead role. I think, I enjoyed him in Tag and I enjoyed him in Get Out and I enjoyed him here, but the script is not serving him well, so this is not recommended.
Yeah, I was like you, Colin. I wasn't really familiar with, when I first saw the trailer for this movie, I was like, what's going on? And yeah. I guess I wasn't familiar with the commercials and the ad campaign and then the web thing. I just didn't, people had to explain to me what it was because I didn't. Eric, were you familiar with this?
I'm sorry, with what again?
With the stuff that this is based on, the commercials and stuff.
I can't remember if it's, I'm thinking it's something else, because I remember there was the, there was another ad campaign that involved NBA players, or one NBA player in, like, old age makeup, but I think that was before this character.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I wasn't familiar with it, and I saw the trailer for it, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, that's how I felt like watching it. It's like, why is this character funny, or what's funny about this? I'm not, and the movie just doesn't really explain, why it needs to exist.
Well, right? I think with the idea of the ad campaign or the commercials was that they would have this basketball player in old age makeup, and then in real life they would punk these other guys on the court, so they would think they would think he's an old man, and then he'd start playing basketball.
Oh, I gotcha.
So he would take these kids down. So that was,
yeah.
That was.
I'd rather see like a Borat type movie, on that. That would be funny.
Yeah.
This just didn't work.
Okay.
The only thing I really know about Kyrie Irving, other than the fact that he plays basketball, is that he's one of these guys that isn't sure if the earth is round or flat.
Oh, is he one of those?
Yes.
Oh, no. Yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, there
really
you go.
Really not enough evidence.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. So that's Uncle Drew. Now we'll talk more about that when we get to the box office in a little bit. We'll talk about that in a little bit. All right. Well, Eric, you and Colin saw Damsel. I have not. Eric, tell us about Damsel.
Okay. This Damsel is the latest film from David and Nathan Zellner, the Zellner brothers. His last film was Kumiko the Treasure Hunter, which a film that many, many people liked. I did not, for reasons I'll explain in a minute. But Damsel is a Western, and it stars Robert Pattinson as a guy that is seeking to track down his fiance, or at least the woman he loves or is intending to propose marriage to, played by Mia Wasikowska, who has been kidnapped by a local bad dude, and he sets off on a journey to find her, accompanied by a guy posing as a priest. The opening scene, we see Robert Forster, who is actually a real priest, and he just kind of decides to just say screw it and takes off all his clothes and goes off in the wilderness. And the guy who was a drunkard and had no money just takes up the priest costume. So this cowardly non-priest and Robert Pattinson's character travel across to find his woman, find his lady. And that's about where we want to kind of stop talking about the plot, because there are some developments in the film that actually turn some things very much on their head. And it's kind of even a hard movie to to review, actually, because we don't want to sort of give away certain things that go on in the film. But, I mean, this is, for in all intents, mostly a comedy, for the most part. It's kind of a really kind of handsomely produced Western for such a low budget. And Pattinson is quite good in this film as a guy is kind of a reluctant hero, you might say, is not exactly have everything on the brain, and is also traveling with this miniature pony that he wants to give to his to his potential future bride. So there are a lot of really kind of interesting twists and turns to this thing. It's a movie that is, with another movie we're going to talk about tonight, a very timely story about men and women's place throughout society and whether or not certain expectations on the various sexes are there to be, either championed or, put down in certain ways. And it's a very hard movie to really sort of discuss without having seen it. It's the kind of movie you want to talk about with people once they view the whole thing and kind of put everything into perspective. I think the movie goes on a bit too long. It's a solid two-hour film. It's kind of divided into halves in a way. I think the first half is a bit stronger than the second one, although the second one I think is supposed to have a bit more of the meat on the bone that I think the Zellners are playing with as far as the sexual dynamics of the story are concerned. But the first half is very enjoyable, and not the back half is not enjoyable. There are some big laughs along the way down the stretch as well. But it's a good film. I like it. I recommend it, and I love to talk about it more with people who have seen it.
Okay. All right. That's Damsel. Hang on, guys. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Eric Childress and Colin Suter are with us. They review the movies with me every Monday morning. And Eric just reviewed Damsel, and we'll hear what Colin thought of it. And then we got more movies to talk about and the box office as well. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We'll take a quick break for the news. And when we come back, more movie reviews with Eric and Colin right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on the 18th floor overlooking beautiful downtown Chicago. It's our new digs, and we're loving it. And, it is Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. We're in the middle of those. We'll get back to that. We'll talk box office with Eric Childress as well. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about summer obsessions. We're going to talk about the greatest inventions of the past 50 years, weird world records. And my dad will call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time, and it's a Monday morning. So, before the break, Eric told us about a film called Damsel, and he gave it a good review, and let's welcome the guys back so we can hear what Colin thought of the movie as well. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, Colin, what did you think of Damsel?
Yeah, I think this movie's really terrific, Eric's right, it is hard to review without talking too much about it, but he did mention the structure of it, which is one of the things I like a lot about this movie. I mean, most movies and, stories in general that we see or hear, build up to a big climax, and then you get some falling action for the last few minutes, and then the end. This movie kind of reshuffles that a little bit in a way that is really interesting. And so I love that it kind of it plays with structure in that way, in a really unexpected way. And, that surprised me quite a bit. He's right. It's two kind of totally different films. It's more comedic in the first half, but by the end, I was very satisfied that the movie kind of did sort of, take me on this unexpected journey that, is not unlike, it's not unlike Something Wild in that respect. Not as good as Something Wild, but it's in that same kind of vein. And I also really appreciate this is a movie that is I kind of grouped with other Westerns that we've had over the years that are sort of taking the Western genre and really turning it on its ear. A bunch of these movies played at our festival, oddly enough, but like movies like Slow West and In a Valley of Violence, and even Bone Tomahawk from a couple years ago. And Damsel, I definitely think fits in with that group of, you know, Westerns that are really sort of, you know, taking that genre and really modernizing it in a way, while also just, you know, playing them as comedies and more often than not, while also having really compelling characters and really strong storylines. So I hope this trend continues because I really like it. And this is a really terrific movie people should check out. And Robert Pattinson is terrific. Mia Wasikowska is great. David Zellner, you know, as the would-be priest is really terrific. It's playing at the Music Box. I'm not sure if it's playing anywhere else. To double check on that, but it's definitely worth seeing, and seeing on the big screen too, because it's a Western. So highly recommended.
All right. It's just, I still continue to be fascinated by how the two leads from those terrible vampire movies, what the hell, the Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart, what the hell, why am I blanking on the
Twilight?
Twilight, yeah. How they've become two of the most interesting actors working today.
Yeah.
I would say it's amazing because both of them are doing great work now.
it's not their fault those movies suck.
Yeah.
It's Twilight.
It's clear.
It's just, you know, you can put anybody in them and they're going to suck.
Yeah, no, that's true. Because both of the, they're like two of my favorite actors working today. So, all right, that's Damsel and highly recommended by the guys. Okay, Eric, tell us about Ideal Home.
Okay, well, here's a name you haven't heard in a while behind in the director's chair,
yeah.
Andrew Fleming.
I know.
Yeah, I had to go back and look to see what his last film was. You'll see a mention of a film called Barefoot with Evan Rachel Wood that I think only went to VOD. But really, the last theatrical film that he had of note was Hamlet 2.
Right.
And this one, now 10 years later, it also stars Steve Coogan along with Paul Rudd, who play a gay couple. Steve Coogan is kind of a celebrity chef or celebrity food connoisseur, or kind of a very flamboyant Anthony Bourdain, I guess, in a way. And Paul Rudd actually is a producer and directs his television show. And they live together. Steve Coogan's son, adult son, is kind of a ne'er-do-well. He has a young of himself, and he's going to jail. He's been arrested, and the young boy, Steve Coogan's grandson, shows up at their door and becomes, you know, a need for them to take care of him. So, you know, that's, you know, exactly what it sounds like. You know, it's three men and a baby, except now it's two gay men and a, you know, slightly young child. And, you know, two guys who, you know, don't exactly know how to handle a child, particularly one who is foul-mouthed, not very well-behaved, and prefers Taco Bell to all the elaborate foods that Coogan's character can dream up. Subplots get worked in, including, you know, child services and who's going to maintain, custody of the child eventually. All pretty standard stuff. And so it's hardly a great movie that breaks any kind of new ground. This movie is really just there for us to just kind of enjoy the natural comic presences of Steve Coogan and Paul Rudd. This is like the third movie in 3 weeks that Paul Rudd has been in, and both of them are quite funny in the movie. There are some big laughs throughout the film. It's not just something anyone should rush out to see, and that's actually, it's not playing in Chicago right now. It's on VOD. It might be getting a brief theatrical opening here in Chicago in the next week or so, but it's on VOD, and that's kind of exactly the perfect kind of place you want to watch this movie, because, like I said, it doesn't break any new ground whatsoever. It's just there for, if you enjoy Steve Coogan and Paul Rudd and get both of them together at the same time, this is a movie that you will find some, you know, a reasonable good time. Plus, it's, you know, it's only like 80, 85 minutes long, so it's certainly not going to wear out its welcome. Don't, you know, mistake it for high art. You've seen this film hundreds of times before. But it's just, you like Coogan, you like Rudd, you can do a lot worse.
Yeah, I Yeah, I liked it. I mean, you know, I happen to be a big fan of Andrew Fleming's. He's directed some movies that I really, really, really love, and I'm a huge fan of Hamlet too. That was on my top 10 list the year that movie came out. I mean, I thought that movie was spectacularly funny. And this is a funny movie. There's a lot of big laughs, and Colin, you were talking about how Uncle Drew, you know, is a commercial for Pepsi. This movie is a commercial for Taco Bell. There's no question about it. The chemistry between the two leads is great. I think the kid's great too. I thought the kid was really good. There's some sweet stuff in the movie, but really, as you said, Eric, I mean, the main reason to watch this movie is because of Paul Rudd and Steve Coogan. Both guys are, you know, have long been entertaining people and being very funny and very charming, and I think they're really well cast here. And they, you know, the thing, one of the things that I really loved about the movie was, I mean, you know, you got these two great actors, these two great leads that are, you know, charming and affable and really like them and you like to watch them. What's really I think sort of exceptional about the movie is that the couple that they play seems like a real couple. Like, they seem, you know what I mean?
Right.
The chemistry between the two of them is perfect. Like, you can see this relationship being a real one. There's no stereotypical stuff in the movie. They play real characters who just happen to be gay. There's some very, very funny sex stuff in the movie too.
Yes, there is.
That really cracked me up a lot. There's involving a bearskin rug.
Yep.
is a pretty great moment. And then just like some of the asides that they throw at one another, like Steve Coogan throws at Paul Rudd, like, "Hey, you wanna?" And then stuff like that. Adds, I think, to the relationship between the two of these guys, and it's good. And again, as you said, Eric, it's not breaking any new grounds. We've seen this movie a million times before. It's like, oh, a kid shows up out of nowhere and we have to deal with it, you know. But it's done in a different way, and it's done from a different point of view. And I hope people actually watch it. I watched it on VOD. I always wish that Andrew Fleming, you know, would make more movies that people would actually see. Nobody sees his movies. That's the problem.
Yeah.
He's made so many great movies over the past, So I hope he continues to make movies, and I think it's a charming and nice little film. And you're right, Eric. I mean, the fact that it's on video on demand is perfect. Like, it really is that kind of movie. You're just sitting on the couch having a good time watching it for 90 minutes, and then it's over. So, but I'm recommending it. I think people should see it. That's called Ideal Home, directed by Andrew Fleming, and featuring two really wonderful and fun and likable performances by Paul Rudd and the great Steve Coogan. So there you go. All right. Before we get to Sicario, I wanted to remind you guys that next week we are going to do our, if you can believe this, we're halfway through the year. And it always sneaks up on me. Like, every year I'm like, oh. So we have to look back at all the movies that we saw so far this year, and then put together our lists for the half year mark. So we'll talk about we'll do the worst. We'll just talk about the best movies that we've seen for the first half of the year, and we'll do that next week. In addition to reviewing, the new movies that come out next week, we will do that. So, all right, we got one more movie to review. And Eric, you didn't see Sicario then.
No, I ended up seeing it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did make it. I did make it out to see it.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. Well, Colin, why don't you tell us about Sicario?
All right. Well, this is the surprise it was ever made sequel of sorts to a movie that didn't seem to need a sequel, but here we are. And it reunites two of the three big stars from that film, Josh Brolin and Benicio del Toro, leaving out Emily Blunt's character. So this one deals with terrorists being smuggled into the United States and blowing themselves up in public establishments. And the feds enlist Brolin and Del Toro to come up with a plan, that will sort of pit the cartel, the drug cartels in Mexico against each other, since they seem to be behind this this wave of terrorism. So they round up about 30 people for their team, and they head down to Mexico and sort of do a fake kidnapping, only it's real, when they kidnap the daughter of a major cartel. And she's, I think, like 13, 14 years old. But they pretend they are rival cartels when they kidnap her. Anyway, they bring her back stateside, and it's up to Del Toro to keep an eye on her. And there are other threads going on as well in this movie, just like there was in the first one. Catherine Keener and Matthew Modine are in this as the higher-ups who give the orders, and who, you know, worry about how the story is going to be, you know, is going to spin in the public eye. And so this one.
Okay, hang on. Hang on.
Oh,
all right, Colin.
Okay.
Hold on. That's their plot description. Hold on. We're going to find out what we all thought of Sicario, the Day of the Soldada. That's all coming up. Eric and Colin, hang on. We will take a quick break. When we come back, we'll give you our reviews of Sicario, the latest Sicario film. And then we'll talk about box office with Eric as well, right here on the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. And we'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are in the middle of the Monday Morning Movie Reviews, because it is Monday. Eric and Colin join me. We're reviewing the movies, and then Eric will stick around, and we'll talk about the box office for this weekend. We're going to talk about Summer Obsessions, weird Guinness World Book, Guinness Records, the greatest inventions of the past 50 years. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time, and much more. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Before the break, Colin told us the plot of Sicario, Day of the Soldado. And now we're going to find out what everybody thought of it. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Thank you.
All right, Colin. Now tell us what you thought of the latest Sicario.
Well, this is a movie that kind of, you know, like I said, this is not, Sicario is not a movie that really needed a sequel. It seemed to be done telling its story, but, you know, it's hard not to compare these two movies, but here we not only don't have Emily Blunt, but we don't have Roger Deakins cinematography. We don't have Denis Villeneuve doing the directing. And so it definitely has a different feel. And I went back and I watched the original Sicario earlier in the week before seeing this one again. And I thought it held up pretty well. I think it's a pretty good movie. Not a great movie, but a pretty good movie. And but this one, I mean, it focuses mostly on, you know, Brolin and Del Toro, both of which who do good work in these movies. But I don't feel like Taylor Sheridan's script really does anything new with these characters or fleshes them out in any real interesting way that necessitates this movie's existence. I mean, certainly the subject of border crossings is a hot topic right now. It's definitely in the public consciousness, in the public eye. And this might just be a case of a movie that, you know, it's the wrong movie at the wrong time, because it basically just plays us out as a straight up thriller. As a thriller, I think it's okay. Again, we're bringing a kid in here in peril this time for this film, instead of, you know, Emily Blunt being the character who's kind of on the outside looking in. But I thought that, you know, one of the strengths of the first film was the Emily Blunt character being sort of the audience through line in all of this. With this movie, I don't know, I just kind of walked out feeling mixed about it and, not really sure like not sure whether I liked it or disliked it. I think there's some, you know, very strong scenes in here. Like I said, Brolin and Del Toro do some really strong work in these films. But I just kind of kept asking myself, well, why did we need this? So I'm not quite sure I know why this story also had to be told. It's directed by Stefano Sollima. I've not seen any of his other films, so I'm not sure what kind of sensibility he's really bringing to it. Doesn't feel like there's much there. So by the end of this movie, I just kind of felt a little empty and not sure what was, what necessitated the film's existence. So, that's kind of where I am with this.
Okay. All right, Eric, what'd you think?
Well, I didn't think any film could top Death Wish as the most tone-deaf release of the year, but this film certainly gives it a run for its money. And like Colin said, it might be the wrong movie at the wrong time, and sometimes that can't be helped with the stuff that's going on, with the border currently. And as this movie opens with a real particular kind of ugliness that, is kind of like throwing red meat to the people who were misinterpreting what's going on around there. The movie opens with a mass attempt at a border crossing, and then the plot line involving terrorists being smuggled in, and we see one of these terrorist incidents happen, which might be the ugliest scene of the year. And yet, by the end of the movie, we seem like we've forgotten about all of that. Colin mentioned why this movie exists. I was not a fan of the first Sicario movie. I didn't think the Sicario said anything new about the drug war, with U.S. and Mexico, and I didn't the two sides that movie tried to bring to the table. I don't think condemned either of those sides successfully, and I think that's a kind of a major failure on its part. It's like Sicario, existed, for people who forgot that Benicio del Toro already won an Oscar for a film that pretty much said so much about the drug war and Steven Soderbergh's Traffic. Sicario said nothing new, and I don't think this movie has anything to say at all. I mean, it's action thriller, I suppose, but it's barely that at times. It has a very cliched plot, the government teaming up with bad people to do bad things to other bad people, but then conscience gets in the way, child in peril, again, kind of tone deaf in a way, and then consciousness getting the better of people who still want to do bad things, and it's a very just confused moral message, and it only just doesn't add up to anything. A lot of reviews are mentioning sort of the social ramifications of what's going on currently, but I didn't see a lot of them mention the word boring, which is what I think this film ultimately is. It might have the action scenes in the film, or the suspense sequences are in some way, there's one major one about halfway through that is kind of mirrors the big moment in the first movie, which I thought was one of that film's more successful moments. This film feels like a carbon copy, right down to the music. It doesn't have the Emily Blunt character. It doesn't have the same sort of cinematography. It's just, I thought this movie is completely disposable, and I really don't know why it exists.
Okay. All right. Guys, hang on, okay? Eric Childress and Colin Suter are with us. We have to take a break, and those are their thoughts on Sicario, The Day of the Soldado. And I'll give you my thoughts, but we're going to break right here for news. And then after the news, I'll give you my review of Sicario. We'll preview what's coming up next week. And then Eric and I will talk about the box office, all here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? It is Monday morning. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to be talking about a bunch of other stuff. Summer obsessions, the greatest inventions of the past 50 years, some weird Guinness World Records, all kinds of other cool stuff. Our text and phone number is 312-981-7200. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Monday morning. And Monday morning means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday. Talk movies and talk box office. And before the break, Colin and Eric gave us their reviews of Sicario, Day of the Soldado. Welcome back, Eric. Welcome back, Colin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And so now I'll tell you what I thought of it. I liked it. I thought it was good. And I'm actually a really big fan of the first movie. I like this one. It is, like you said, Eric, that first 15 minutes or so is really difficult to watch. And doesn't really hang into what the rest of the movie is about, because then it gets into the drug cartels things. The terrorism plot gets dropped after the first 20 minutes of the film, and then it becomes just, you know, very, very similar to what the first one was, and it's just pitting these cartels against one another. But I thought it was well made. I thought the action sequences were well done. I thought the girl was really good. I liked her a lot, the little girl. It goes without saying, Josh Brolin and Benicio del Toro are both terrific in this movie, and I think really, really strong. And, you know, del Toro, obviously, you know, continuing to do really interesting and quiet work. And there's a long stretch near the end of this movie where he's like, he's wordless, and it's really an excruciating scene towards the end of the movie. I didn't think it's the greatest thriller of all time, but I thought it was entertaining. I thought the action sequences were good. I thought Brolin and Del Toro were both, you know, tough asses, and I really liked both of them. I thought the Catherine Keener, the scenes between the team and Catherine Keener, we're good. Modine has a couple of moments in it, and I thought it worked. I thought it was a solid thriller, and it worked for me. And I also, you know, it was interesting how this subplot involving a teenage boy who is working with the cartels to bring in people across the border, smuggle people across the border, that subplot seemed distracting for a lot of the movie until the payoff at the end, which I thought was huge. And all of that, you know, all of that when they would pull away and do this kid's story, you know, at times I would be like, well, I mean, and I thought the kid's story was kind of interesting. I just didn't think that it fit with what else was going on as perfectly as the rest of the movie. I got affected when they would cut away to this kid. But then, like I said, the big payoff for that, and leading to the final scene of the movie, which I think is great. I love the final scene of the movie. I think it works, and so that was a big payoff as well. So I liked it. I did, and I'm recommending it. Okay, there you go. You guys didn't like it. I liked it. There you go. All right. Well, next week we've got Ant-Man and the Wasp. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got?
The first Purge.
Oh God!
Yeah,
yeah.
Colin, I got you. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know. Enjoy. Have fun.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Well, no. But
first Purge. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We get to watch Marissa Tomei, and I hope the check clears. So that's it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know why she's doing this movie, and I don't understand it. I don't get it. But anyway, so we'll do that. We'll talk about that next week, as well as revealing our favorite films of 2018 so far. We are halfway through the year, and we're going to do our halfway roundup of the movies. So, all right, Colin, thanks, man.
Sure.
All right, and we will talk to you soon. All right.
Sounds good.
All right, Colin, take care. So Colin is off now, and we'll talk to him again next week. And so there you go. Let's hang out here for a second here, and we're going to talk with Eric about the box office. All right, Eric?
Hello.
Okay. So number one at the box office, Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom, $60 million, bringing its total up to $264 million, almost $265 million in 2 weeks. That's pretty strong.
It's strong. It's the 17th highest total ever for a film on its 10th day. It had a 59% drop, so it's clearly not going to have the staying power that the first Jurassic World movie did, and clearly not even going to come close to as much as that make. But, you know, this movie's going to try to make a run at $400 million. That's, and it's already, it's like $62 million away from $1 billion already.
Yeah, well, it's still pretty solid. Although, I still can't believe that the first Jurassic World the kind of money it made. It's crazy. And this is a much better movie, I think.
I agree.
Yeah. So you want to talk about making money. Number two, The Incredibles 2, $45.5 million.
Yeah. And this is the biggest story after Avengers this summer, actually. And, what a year. I mean, Disney actually has, like, the two biggest bombs of the year and, like, the three biggest hits. Mm-hmm. You know, they had Black Panther, they got Infinity War, and now they got Incredibles 2, which, once again, is like the seventh best ever 3 weeks or 17-day total, $439 million.
Man, oh man,
it's pretty incredible. So it's going to be one of the 10 highest grossing films of all time, and by next weekend it will pass Finding Dory to become Pixar's biggest domestic grosser ever.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And what were the two bombs that they had this year? Solo?
Well, Solo and A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, A Wrinkle in Time, that's right.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting about that movie.
Yeah.
Number three, Sicario. This is pretty impressive, I think. $19 million. I mean, did anybody expect that?
I had a hunch that it could do a number like this. I kind of had it around like 14, 15 million. I figured it was going to open bigger than the first one. You know, there is, that's one of those, like, almost like a whisper campaign. That's, you know, people, if you remind people that Sicario exists, they're reminded that they really like the movie. So this was sort of a big reminder that people like Sicario.
Yeah.
And, and those people clearly showed up. I don't think that I'm not really ready to say that there was any kind of like political, basis for, the grosses being high or something like that. But, $19 million, it was well advertised and it was all over. There were a lot of commercials for the film.
Yeah.
So I think they got the job out, and, all indications that this movie's probably going to clear $50 million. It's going to need a little over $100 million worldwide to break even. It cost a little bit more than the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was interesting. I mean, considering the first movie didn't turn a profit, then they turned this one out for $35 million. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah,
it's possible.
Well, the theater was packed when we went on Saturday, and I was really surprised. I mean, I really was at how big a turnout this thing had.
Yeah, Sony was kind of lowballing this thing. It made $2 million in the Thursday night previews. And Sony was still lowballing it, saying like, "Yeah, we're thinking about $12 million." So now, it comes out to be $19 million,
yeah,
which is, more around the range of what a $2 million Thursday night preview should do.
Right?
They're just, they're crying, victory, surprise victory. I'm like, well, no, you had a pretty good start. You're just lowballing it.
Yeah. Number four, Uncle Drew with $15.5 million. What are we looking at there?
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. I mean, the budget on this thing is somewhere between like 17 and 19 million, I've seen reports for. So, I mean, it's going to need about mid-50s to break even. We're not really going to count on much international for it, but so it's possible. I mean, it seems like there was a kind of an upswell the last couple days leading up to its release, from critics who were saying like, this is a perfectly amiable, charming, funny comedy. It's got a better score of Rotten Tomatoes than Sicario does, although both are in the positive, very marginally in the positive. So it's possible that this movie might find a brief audience to get itself up there.
Hmm. Okay. Number five, Ocean's 8 with $8 million this week, bringing its total up to $114 million.
Yeah, so this is looking like it's going to turn a profit for Warner Brothers. So they certainly have no excuse not to greenlight a sequel for it. So looks like probably Ocean's 9, maybe sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then number six, Tag. $5.6 million. It's total of $40 million. Well, it's gonna top off at what? Will it make 50?
Yeah, I think it's gonna make probably just get over 50, or it's gonna be right there. And that's probably because it's about 45-50 million is about what I was expecting.
Yeah.
For this movie, so it's doing what it should have done.
Okay, number seven, Deadpool 2, $3.4 million. That's up to $310 million total.
Just yeah, big hit
in America.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sanju coming in at number eight with $2.5 million.
Indian film, Bollywood film.
Yeah.
Not many people reviewed it. Rotten Tomatoes, but $2.5 million.
Yeah,
sneaking in there.
Yep. Number nine, Solo, A Star Wars Story, $2.2 million, $207 million total.
Yeah. Remember the days when $200 million was, like, the biggest hit ever?
Oh, yeah.
And now $200 million is considered, you know, for this movie, is, like, one of the biggest bombs of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And number 10, Won't You Be My Neighbor? Second time in the top 10 for this documentary, bringing its total up to $7.4 million. And it's a movie that a lot of people are going to see right now.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knows who Mr. Rogers is. You know, everybody knows that. And again, you know, I'm sure that the people were probably taking their kids who are not, you know, I mean, is Mr. Rogers still in reruns some places?
I would think so, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, I would
okay,
think
yeah.
So.
I mean, I don't know where it's being played at all currently, but yeah, I mean, the legacy of Mr. Rogers is an important one, and I think is maybe even more important than ever right now. Yeah. And, you know, all the lessons that he taught for kids, I'm sure that there are people that grew up were interested in the story. People, you know, they want to bring their kids to it. And it's really just kind of remarkable that this is the fourth weekend of the summer that a documentary has been in the top 10.
Yeah.
You know, we had two weeks in a row now for Won't You Be My Neighbor, and we had 2 weeks where RBG was in there. So, you know, maybe liberals are showing up. I don't know.
Yeah.
but clearly, you know, the documentaries are doing strong, and, you know, maybe that bodes well for, you know, forgive me, Nick, when Michael Moore's film comes out in September.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll do fine.
Yeah.
And then, so next week, though, we're looking at, I mean, obviously, number one is going to be the Ant-Man movie.
Yeah, Ant-Man's going to, yeah, the first Ant-Man, you know, only did like $57 million opening weekend. Yeah, only. But I think that you're going to see an increase probably in the 70s for that one next week. Mm-hmm. It's going to do more than the first film did. And after that, I mean, I think Jurassic World and Incredibles 2 might come in 2-3, depending on how well Purge does.
Yeah.
Because those Purge movies, they make money.
They do. I know they do.
You know?
I don't understand each one
of those movies has done better than the last.
I don't understand that. I really
don't. I don't either.
I just don't get it, man.
Yeah.
I don't get it. All right. Well, that's what we got to look forward to next week. We'll talk about that in the box office. And also, like I said before, we will unveil our favorite movies so far halfway through the year. So,
yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. All right, Eric, thanks, man.
You got it.
Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
You too.
All right. There we go. We'll take a quick break here on WGN.